This edition of Tasting Room Radio is presented by Harbor Air, a quintessential West Coast experience. Safe, fast, and fun connections throughout coastal BC. You can find them at harborair.com. And hello, I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio, year 15. Started in a studio in the barn on the Naramata bench. Let me tell you about next week, first of all. Calling it In the Neighborhood. It's the four sponsors who support Tasting Room Radio. Hillside, The Hatch, Jason Parks Customs, Moon Cursor, and Unsworth in the Cowichan Valley. And speaking of supporting sponsors, we once again proudly let you know that the title sponsor of Tasting Room Radio is Harbor Air. And a number of these interviews would not have happened if I hadn't got on those flights and come into Vancouver. So that's next week, the long weekend. Okay, this one, the working title is called The Pinot Special. It's there for a reason. Maybe someday I'll tell you why. But the guests are, if you're a Pinot fan, here's your lineup. Nigel Greening, the owner of Felton Road in New Zealand, one of the great Pinot labels in the world. Mike Ratchin from Ratchin Cellars. Daniel Dragert from Kutatash. Lane Craig from 40 Knots, one of the very best. Grant Stanley from Spearhead. Barb and Ian Phillip, wonderful wine experts, join us for commentary. Christine Coletta from Haywire, Okanagan Crush Pad. Chris Turek from Unsworth, talk about a Pinot. Jack Meyer from Meyer Family Vineyards. David Patterson from Tantalus. Curtis Colt, an educator and a wine judge. Vikram Vij. And we close with a blind Pinot tasting at John Schreiner's house with Brent Gushawati, the man who created bcpinotnoir.com, and one of the acknowledged Pinot masters in the world, and John Glavina from Giant Head Winery in the Okanagan. That's it. I'll try to explain as we go along because there's a mix of events that happened here, but we're talking Pinot for the next hour on Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Jason Parks Customs, the home of The Hatch, Crown and Thieves. Speaking of Crown and Thieves, Crown and Thieves 2021 Winemaker's Wench on the nose. Apricots, oranges, and honey, followed by a taste of ripe peach and melon. 2021 Winemaker's Wench. I just got this note from the Artful Dodger, Devlin Barker, at The Hatch. A reminder that The Hatching Post Saloon and Smokery is now open. All the details at jasonparkscustoms.com and crownandthieves.com. Let's start this Pinot celebration with two of the very best, the organizers of the Pinot celebration in past years, Jack Meyer from Meyer Family Vineyards, David Patterson from Tantalus, and two good friends, Curtis Colt, commentator, wine judge, and the man himself, Vikram Vij. The voices you heard talking to the room were Jack Meyer from Meyer Family Vineyards and David Patterson from Tantalus Vineyards, speaking not just about themselves and their vineyards, but about Pinot in general. Across British Columbia. Should we extend that to Ontario 1 year?
Funny you say that. We at the Vancouver Wine Fest, we were talking to a couple of the Ontario producers. And so we're talking about next year inviting Ontario producers to come over, maybe bring a contingent of between 5 and 10 producers. Let's break down those barriers between provinces so they can actually sell wine out here and vice versa before it matters. Well,
part of the barriers is their impression. They're convinced that we're homers and we're not going to drink anything outside of our own borders. Part of that is true. We kind of love BC wines, and they're kind of thinking that maybe there's not room for Ontario here.
I think that we would hope that people are going to support local, and in Ontario they're going to do the same, and it'll be difficult for us to sell a large amount of wine there. But you know, I think David and I could probably both tell you that we have a lot of customers in Ontario, and I'm sure that some of those Ontario wineries have customers in BC that they get shipped directly without any consequence, and I'll say it out loud here. As you know, nobody's going to do anything.
Nobody. Here's the deal. Describe, if you would, Jack, your Pinot Noir from Meyer that you're pouring today. Just give us a picture.
McLean Creek Vineyard site has it's a fairly hot site, and sun is on it all day long. It faces to the south. It's got some gravelly, loose soil and sandy loam, but we find just very typically on that property We always get a lot of complexity, a lot of sort of earthiness, and it becomes a very much an old world Burgundian style. We like to focus on terroir-driven wines, so when we go to our property that we have up in East Kelowna, the differences every year to year is that property always seems to be a little bit more sort of new world, and then our McLean Creek kind of always a little more old world in styles.
And David, you are in East Kelowna,
yes.
And what's the terroir giving you for your Pinot?
It's interesting, the site Jack's talking about, it's only about 3 kilometers as the crow flies from my site, but the soils are quite different, and the expression we get off our site, I was just in Edmonton at the Northern Lands Festival, and Jack and I were both on a Pinot panel there, along with Grant Stanley and Paul Pender from Tours, and I was referring to my site as a tannic site. No matter what I do winemaking wise, we make tannic Pinot, and we don't apologize for that, because it's very indicative of our very silty but quite heavy soils, because that's such fine particulate that it almost presents like clay, even though the soils don't have a negative cation exchange capacity. They have the water holding capacity of clay, and that really translates into these slightly heavier, deeper, darker styles of Pinot. 5 kilometers away from me, you go up to where Spearhead is, or where Rhymer Vineyard is, that Jack was talking about, you get a far more sort of lifted, new world, ethereal kind of wine.
David Patterson, the winemaker of Tantalus Vineyards, and Jack Meyer from Meyer Family Vineyards, who does it all.
This is The Tasting Room.
I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio at Vidges in Vancouver. Curtis Colt is joining us. First of all, let's talk about you and Pinot Noir and of course, this celebration. Have you attended before?
I was at the inaugural BC Pinot Noir celebration that was at Meyer Family Vineyards, who have always been one of my favorite local Pinot Noir producers. Chris Carson, the winemaker there, the guy's got the magic touch with Pinot, and you know, I'm a big BC wine proponent, and it's one of my favorite varieties, so you know, this event is win-win.
Do you think you'd be surprised by some of the textures, some of the tastes that you experience? Just, and there's only 9 of them here.
Yeah, you know, going around, I was actually taking, you know, it certainly makes a difference. Obviously, the vintage, how it's farmed, but various clones of Pinot Noir, I'm actually finding it cool going from wine to wine. Some of them almost, you know, may as well be a different variety. You know, there's so much of a difference of style. And that's what I love. You know, it all really depends where the grapes are being grown. They interpret and express the soil type. And so we are really getting a sense of place from up and down the Okanagan and then over on the island and all around BC.
You're one of the people who can actually do this, and that is you can zero in on what Pinot Noir profile suits your soul, your body, makes your berries dingle. So can you describe that?
Yeah, different people want different things out of Pinot Noir. You know, I always love, especially when it's the summer, maybe a bit of a chill on it. I love the berry fruit, the plummy characteristics. What I do love is once you start to get a year or two extra of age on a Pinot Noir, you start to get those umami notes, those sun-dried tomato, the soy, hoisin, things like that starting to come in. And I just find it's so food-friendly, and that's when you just get, it's an extra dimension that's brought into the wine. I love it when those savory notes start popping out.
Curtis Colt is joining us.
Welcome to Tasting Room Radio, celebrating all the great things we love about food and wine.
Vikram Vidge, that was him talking to the room, basically introducing this Pinot Noir celebration, or at least a tease of it. Are you a Pinot Noir fan?
Huge. I've always been studying in Austria. I mean, one of the things that we used to love is studying Pinot Noir. And I mean, you know, it was considered one of the toughest grapes to grow, toughest to manage. I remember joking with my chef friends, saying, oh my God, Pinot Noir is like a relationship. It needs so much nurturing and caring. And the fact that we are growing such great Pinot Noir in, you know, Okanagan and British Columbia, it goes to show that, you know, we as Canadian chefs are not only just proud, but we as Canadians should be proud of our backyard and what we have in our backyard and how great that is.
Did you think about early on, is my food going to work with Pinot? Or did you make adjustments? Or did we make it? What happened?
I never actually sat out to say, is my food going to work with Pinot? what I sat out to do was, I cannot sit here and worry if my food goes with it or not. I said, I will make it work because I'm going to take a sip of the wine and it's going to be damn tasty, and I'm going to eat my food and that's going to be tasty. I wasn't expecting to this perfect match made in heaven in that sense. And so I just said, this is what grows in my backyard. I consider it like an Indian village. This is what grows in my backyard. I'm going to drink that. And the reason why French got to where they did was because they were so proud of their own backyards. You know, people who were in Rhone didn't drink wine from Burgundy. People who were in Burgundy didn't drink wine from southwestern France. They were like, no, this is what grows in the backyard. That's what we're going to drink. It's like a farmer that grows great potatoes and tomatoes in the same way our wine producers are the same way. They're part of a culinary journey of a region.
Vidges has, depending on who you talk to in the room, 15, 17, perhaps as many as 20 single varietal Pinot Noirs, but there's also Blanc de Blanc. There's all sorts of, there's rosés. So it's a Pinot house with a very complex menu.
Yes, and the complexity of the menu comes from putting our passion of Indian cuisine, which is so complex, onto the plate. Same thing, the complexity of the wine, whether it comes from Meyer families or from Tantalus or from any other places, they're putting their passion, they're putting their food in a bottle, and I'm putting my food on a plate. And that's why this match is so perfect.
I love the smokiness of the Meyer. I love the minerality on the other side from Probato in Kamloops. You would expect it's going to be different. Kamloops is a completely different terroir.
Exactly, and Unstrut on the island. How great it is. And that's what we're doing. I think that's what we should be proud of, is saying, rather than saying all Pinots are the same, no. We have our own region, our own style, and that's what. Some days you'll drink Answer, some days you will drink Tantalus, some days you should drink Jack Myers, you know, depending on what you feel like doing. And so that's the beautiful part about cooking, is that whatever you feel like doing that day is what you should do.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Jason Parks Customs, the home of The Hatch, Crown and Thieves. Speaking of Crown and Thieves, Crown and Thieves 2021 Winemaker's Wench. On the nose, apricots, oranges, and honey, followed by a taste of ripe peach and melon. 2021 Winemaker's Wench. I just got this note from the Artful Dodger, Devlin Barker, at The Hatch. A reminder that The Hatching Post Saloon and Smokery is now open. All the details at jasonparkscustoms.com and crownandthieves.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Mooncursor Vineyards. Their tasting room is now open, and the first club shipments of the year are going out. Very happy to report that you have new releases to choose from at Mooncursor. The gorgeous 2021 Roussanne Marsan, the Carmenere 2020, the 2021 Dolcetto, and the 2020 Malbec. Mooncursor, the 2019 best performing small winery in Canada. Details at mooncursor.com. Welcome back. This is Tasting Room Radio, our Pinot special. There was a gathering a couple of years ago at the Victoria Wine Festival called Geeking Out on Pinot. It was a great panel. When winemakers are allowed to geek out and they're given permission to geek out, they will fully geek. And the geekies were Mike Rathjen from Rathjen Cellars, Daniel Dragert from Kutatash, and Lane Craig from 40 Knots. But first, from the Hall of Fame of Pinot winemaking, Nigel Greening, the owner of Felton Road, Central Otago, New Zealand, specifically Bannockburn, South Island. Tasting Room Radio, New Zealand. Rapidly approaching the end of this journey, we come to Felton Road. And I was warned by my friend David Schofield, if you go to New Zealand, you must go to Felton Road. And we're about to find out why. Nigel Greening is the director, owner of Felton Road. And Nigel, it falls on you to explain exactly where we are in this beautiful little valley, where we are in relation to Queenstown, Cromwell, things like that.
I suppose the first thing to say is that Central Otago is the most southerly wine-growing region in the world, and it's a series of quite separate sub-regions. They're not connected, and Bannockburn is a small U-shaped north-facing bowl at the bottom of the Cromwell Valley. It looks up the Cromwell Valley towards most of the other wine growing, but it has quite a unique geology because it's at the southern limit of the glaciers, and we have quite a lot of glacial soils here. The glacial soils are distinctly different from alluvial water-based soils, and that's what we're looking for Pinot Noir. We're searching for glacial lerth on which to plant Pinot Noir, and we find that here in Bannockburn.
What do the Pinots from this area, how different are they from the rest? What do we find on the nose? What are the notes that we find in the mouth?
They're traditionally quite generous as wines. This is one of the warmer regions, so they're heavily perfumed. They're quite full-bodied for Pinot Noir. They can have quite rich tannins in them. There's quite a lot of tannin in Bannockburn wine, but it's very, very fine-grained. It's one of the most heavily developed, in viticulture terms, as regions go. Almost all the land that can be planted to wine here is already planted. And so this is an area where the planting has almost fully reached its potential.
Was it always going to be a Pinot area from the first plantings? Did someone just say this is the place?
Yeah. It has a wonderful history in that respect. We know there was a Frenchman here, Jean-Désiré Fourreau, who came to grow grapes to make wine for gold miners in the 1860s. Mm-hmm. And we know that Fourreau planted a vineyard here and won New Zealand's first ever wine medal in 1876 for what's described as a red Burgundy-style wine. We don't know if it was Pinot, but we suspect it must have been. In 1895, there was a viticulturist called Brigato who came here at the New Zealand government's request. And he made a rather startling statement of saying there's no place on earth better suited to grape Pinot Noir than Central Otago, which was a surprising thing for a man to say.
Your T-shirt says Felton Road 2008, organic, biodynamic, zero Cabernet emissions. I love that.
Yeah, I suppose that's our philosophy.
Cheeky.
Edgy.
And you're certified now.
We've been certified now for 5 years.
You know, there are some people in the business, in and out of the business, who think the biodynamic crowd are completely loony.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, let's be clear. They've got very, very good reason to think that. People who follow calendars and put preparations on the land and think that makes them biodynamic, I don't have a lot of time for that idea. We're not particularly keen on the calendar. The preparation's okay, we can take them or leave them. The key points are the philosophies of managing an ecosystem in a way that is completely sustainable, giving equal attention to everything from the microbes at the bottom end to the human beings that work the land at the top.
So what you truly believe is in sustainability?
Yeah, we believe in Nick Mills at Ripon up in the north end of Central Otago has a wonderful expression. He talks about your negotiation with the land, and it's a farmer's duty to negotiate with the land and say, look, I'm sorry, I've got to put 5,000 vines here. I know you're not going to like it. What can I do to make it worth your while? And so you achieve a balance within the land of what the land needs as well as what you need.
You're saying that the land talks to you.
Yeah, absolutely. But in a very practical way, not in a mystical way.
Do the plants talk to you?
In a very practical way.
Nigel Greening, who is the director owner of Felton Road, Bannockburn, Central Otago, just outside of Cromwell. What you're saying is at the end of the day, it's what's in the bottle that's going to determine.
Absolutely. The fact that we manage it this way is not because I'm trying to win sustainability awards. It's because I genuinely believe it's the way you make the best fruit you can.
I've seen some bottles marked vegan wine and vegetarian wine.
Yeah.
Do you go in that direction?
Well, our wines, by definition, are vegan simply because we don't use any additives within the winemaking process other than sulfur. So by definition, they're vegan wines. Again, that's not because we're vegans. It's just because we don't believe in putting additives into wine.
And how many of these wines are available in the colonies, Canada, for example?
All the wines that we make are sold in Canada.
Did we make that commitment to you, or did you make that commitment to us?
It was a kind of two-way thing. We spend a lot of time in Canada. Blair visits nearly every year.
Blair is your winemaker.
Yeah. Between the two of us, we split the world pretty much in half for sales. We export to 44 countries. So we've got a lot of traveling to do. But Blair loves Canada, and so he reserves that for himself. It's one of those countries he says, no, I'm doing that.
And what do we like best in Canada? What sells best?
We're best known for Pinot, but Chardonnay has been a huge increase in interest for us in Canada.
His name is Nigel Greening. He owns Felton Road, and that's where we are in central Otago, our New Zealand wine tour, South Island. You still found your consumer.
Oh, yeah. Almost throughout the world, the wines are only available on allocation. So we have a waiting list of people wanting to get an allocation of the wine.
What's total production, Nigel?
12,000 cases.
That's it.
There will never be any more. We produce more fruit than that, and we sell the surplus. We have a zero growth policy, right, and that's part of our sustainability. Why? You can't be sustainable and also be growing.
I noticed that that there in my travels, that there seemed to be a number, and it was 10,000 cases. Past 10,000 cases, I found that most wineries had to make concessions,
yeah,
in order to go beyond that.
I completely agree. When the day I bought Felton Road 15 years ago, Blair and I sat down, we had a beer, and one of my first questions was, at what point does this stop being a craft and it start becoming manufacturing? Yeah. And Blair spent about 5 minutes doing a few notes, and he turned around and he said, 12,000 cases. He said, that's it, we're never going to make more than 12,000 cases. That's a philosophy we've stuck to ever since.
Thank you, Nigel. This is fantastic. I finally can say I've been to Felton Road. The owner-director is Nigel Greening. They are in Bannockburn, central Otago, South Island, if you're following along on your map at home. And we're going to go taste now. This is Tasting Room Radio, South Island.
Welcome to Tasting Room Radio.
We're going to start these interviews. The Island's Pinot Noir seminars. The masterclass was called Geek Out on Island Pinot. Mike Rathjen from Rathjen Cellars, Daniel Dreggert from Kutatash, Dan Wright from Unsworth, Lane Craig from 40 Knots. You will hear a lot of what they have to say in the room because it got recorded. Thank you very much. Daniel Dreggert from Kutatash has joined me here. And Lane Craig from 40 Knots, Comox. The reason why I wanted you guys to talk to me was I wanted to talk about Pinot in the Cowichan and out of the Cowichan, because we hear about the Cowichan a lot. They position themselves well. Let's talk about Pinot outside of the Cowichan specifically, and where you are on Salt Spring and in Saanich and up in Comox, how it changes. Daniel Dreggert, Kutatash, Salt Spring and Saanich.
Well, certainly I would have never expected Pinot to be so successful in North Saanich, yeah, or on Salt Spring Island. The temperatures historically, when I looked at them prior to sort of 2013, just really weren't there. However, the last, since 2013, have been really quite warm harvests. North Saanich, the west side of the Saanich Peninsula, I should say, is a little area called Deep Cove, and it's sort of protected by all sides. It doesn't really have an ocean influence, even though the vineyard that we lease...
It's right there.
You can see it. It's amazing that it doesn't have any real influence, and it's about 5 degrees, maybe on average, warmer than even the airport, which is sort of what we look at for our weather predictions, but... up in Deep Cove, it's fantastic. The soils are really like 100% clay. They're not a mix. Clay on clay at the site we lease, and very free draining. The sublayer is red, indicating that it is very free draining. Now, Salt Spring, also interesting. A little bit cooler, has a little more ocean influence. We have a little bit more wind cutting across our site, which is nice for us because it leaves it about a week later, so it allows us to spread out our work. It also does a good job on some disease control because we get more airflow through our canopies. Along the same line, I've worked a lot in the Cowichan, and we used to look over at the Saanich Peninsula, and you would just see in October this line of sunshine. And we used to say, it's always sunny in Sydney. And it's kind of true. There's way less rain. And if you look at the records for Saanich Peninsula, you know, they get about, I don't know, two-thirds of the rain the Cowichan does. And most of that rain is going to fall in the wintertime, of course, but it makes a huge difference in the shoulder season, and that's when we need to get the hang time for Pinot Noir.
And how many different clones are we talking about?
Well, at our site in North Saanich, we've got one clone, 114, a Dijon clone. And we've been trying to do a lot of different techniques in the winery to provide some complexity, because normally people want all the clones because they you know, that's, they provide their own unique personality to the wine. Over on Salt Spring, we have 115 and 777. 777 is great. It's really intense. It's perfumed. And on Salt Spring, we're cropping it at about 1 ton an acre. So when we do pull off a Pinot from Salt Spring, it's fantastic.
Did you plant more?
We are planning on...
I saw the plantings.
We've planted more, yeah.
Lane Craig, 40 knots in Comox. Lane, Comox, how different is it there compared to what you hear around you from the other wine growers and growers and makers?
Well, that's the good question, Terry. We're on Comox Peninsula.
Yeah.
So we're hanging down in the water, not that far from the airbase. You know, at Comox itself, Terry, or the valley, there's so many variations in weather and temperature. Our heat units on the peninsula are similar to that of Cowichan Valley, and we've actually even had a year where we were higher. So it is a microclimate there, but the microclimate we've examined, there's probably, from what we see, 400 to 500 more acres on that peninsula that are the same as our terroir and potential vineyards.
What clones did you plant?
For the Pinot Noir, we have the 115, the 777, and the 828. The 828 we're using predominantly for rosé and sparkling. The 777 for our table wine, and the 115 for our amphora-driven Pinot Noir. They all perform well. I mean, they perform like a Pinot. They're a pain in the butt some days, and they require a lot of work, and there's no free lunch growing Pinot Noir. No. I don't care where you grow it. It's a tough one.
Mike Ratchin, Ratchin Cellars. The reason why I asked you three here was because I like to paint you as the outsiders. You're not the Cowichan, you know?
Yeah, Saanich Peninsula.
Right, mm-hmm. Saanich Peninsula. How different are those Pinots there? Is it a different growing condition?
Well, I've got two sites on the Saanich Peninsula that I only use for sparkling wine because they get nowhere near being ripe enough to make full red Pinot Noir out of, which is great because we still get this beautiful long hang time. I'm picking them late September, early October to make sparkling wine, and they've got beautiful, perfect numbers and flavor ripeness to make sparkling. I don't, in my own holdings in Saanich, have Pinot Noir planting that I would make red wine out of, but there's definitely some microclimates that I think are well suited. I'm starting to work with one vineyard in Mount Newton Bench, and it definitely would have the growing degree days and the climate to make a full red wine Pinot Noir. So
what clones are you dealing with?
I'm working with the Saison vineyard up in the North Cowichan, so we've got an equal blend of 115, 667, 777, and 828 in equal portions.
Okay.
Yeah, a barrel of each.
You guys are pumped about Pinot. We know that. We know the room is, the people who are actually writing stories and doing media and pouring Pinot. The consumer, have they bought into it yet, the idea that Pinot is creating a home on Vancouver Island?
Well, if my sellout rate is any indication, I think so, because it doesn't last a year, every year. We need to make more. We need to plant more. Yeah, it's selling quickly.
Certainly, we've had an amazing response from the Vancouver restaurant market. Amazing feedback, and we can't give them enough allocation.
It's not only the Pinot that, you know, has great traction. You know what? British Columbians and Canadians alike, they buy local. We grow Pinot locally, and they're loving the wine and buying it. So they're supporting what we can grow.
Thank you, gents. Thank you.
Thanks, Terry.
Thank you.
Thanks, Terry.
Mike Ratchin, Ratchin Cellars. Daniel Daggett, Coup d'Etage, Salt Spring and Sandwich. Lane Craig, 40 Knots in Comox.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Mooncursor Vineyards. Their tasting room is now open, and the first club shipments of the year are going out. Very happy to report that you have new releases to choose from at Mooncursor. The gorgeous 2021 Roussanne Marsan, the Carmenere 2020, the 2021 Dolcetto, and the 2020 Malbec. Mooncursor, the 2019 best performing small winery in Canada. Details at mooncursor.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. Unsworth Vineyards is pleased to be part of this year's Cowichan Wine Festival passport-style tasting event held this year in the month of June. In addition, they will be part of an evening tasting party at Brentwood School August 4th, where you can taste all of the participating wineries in one go under a summer starlit night by the ocean. Details at unsworthvineyards.com. This is our Pinot special on Tasting Room Radio. I'm the one that's geeking out because the lineup just gets better and better and better. Talking Pinots in this segment is one of the best Pinot makers in Canada. His name is Grant Stanley at Spearhead. And then two of the great wine minds in this country, Barb and Ian Phillip, will give us comment on Pinot in BC. Christine Coletta from Okanagan Crush Pad and Haywire, who are totally and completely committed to Pinot with their new plantings in the Garnet Valley. Many, many acres of Pinot have been planted and will be the future of Okanagan Crush Pad and Haywire. And then from the Cowichan Valley, Chris Turek from Unsworth, home of one of the best Pinots in this country. Let's geek out. Under the S's, Savard, Scorched Earth, Stag's Hollow, Stone Boat. I found one of the original Pinot makers and one of the best winemakers in all of Canada, Grant Stanley, Spearhead Winery. Is this your fifth year? Have you done all 5 years?
I have attended four of them.
Are you like a proud papa?
Well, it's just great. It's great to see Pinot being enthused about, and you know, certainly when I got here in 2003, I was talking about Pinot Noir, and people were still a little bit reluctant to say that it was, you know, the key noble red wine varietal for our region. And I think, you know, it definitely has emerged as that now.
Where was the breakthrough, do you think?
You know, all it takes is a few cool years to remind everybody that we really only have about 100 to 120 days of good, solid ripening weather in this, in our circumstance here, in this terroir. And Pinot Noir only takes 100 days, so it's not like a lot of the kind of Bordeaux varieties that just need more extended period of time with sunshine and long autumns. So Pinot here is a 10 out of 10 proposition. Every vintage is a potential to make good wine.
And there's value in the cool?
Yeah, there is. Yeah, I mean, if you get too hot, then it doesn't work anymore. You get a bit baked, and the acidity goes away. So no, our calling card is in our great acid and our great diurnal temperatures closer to harvest and all of those good things that make good Pinot Noir here.
I was looking. I was just making some notes on the way up. Cherry, raspberry, mushroom, forest floor, vanilla, baking spice.
Rhubarb.
Rhubarb.
Yeah, rhubarb, persimmon. There's all sorts of different expressions of Pinot Noir as a varietal, but certainly you hit the big ones, and they all come, you know, I think the essence of great Pinot Noir is that it can't be green, but it has to have a bit of herbality, a little bit of spice in there just to help it age along and not be too one-dimensional.
When you taste other Pinot Noirs from Burgundy or Oregon or California, New Zealand, wherever they're from.
Yeah.
You taste the side by each. What do we say with our Pinot?
Well, we definitely stack up. I would say that we are in the cool climate spectrum. You know, I'm always surprised that really ripe vintages and ripe wines that come out of the Okanagan don't look that way when you put them amongst some hotter regions and some other regions. So I would say we fall more into the camp here of like New Zealand Pinot Noir, Chilean Pinot Noir, where there is that cool, real genuine cool climate element to it.
Talk to the first-time wine buyer, first-time stepping into the Pinot Noir ring. What do you look for, besides price, because it can be a very expensive grape, what do you look for? What kind of things?
Weight, texture, body. I mean, some you know, some light, very very light Pinot Noirs, you know, express themselves with power in other ways. Meaning, you know, I've tasted some very hot, alcoholic, overly extracted Pinot Noirs in from all over. And I think the key to great Pinot Noir is gentle elegance, extraction without tannins. You know, most people that are drawn to Pinot Noir are drawn to it because they like acidity, but they don't like astringency.
We're talking with Grant Stanley from Spearhead Winery. What are you pouring today?
I'm pouring my three single vineyard Pinot Noirs from 2017. So all made in the winery under the same direction, the same winemaking guidelines, the same sort of protocol, as it were, with wild ferments and long skin contact. But they're all completely different expressions of wine because they come from different vineyards in different places throughout the valley. So the one is Coyote Vineyard, which is my own personal home vineyard. And the other one is the Saddle Block Vineyard, which is the Spearhead home block vineyard. And then we are working with a vineyard down in Summerland called the Golden Retreat Vineyard. And so that rounds out our third. And as I say, they're all completely different and unique wines and special in their own way.
Much like the person who made them.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thanks. Cheers.
One of the fathers of BC Pinot Noir, Grant Stanley, winemaker at Spearhead.
Welcome to Tasting Room Radio. Celebrating all the great things we love about food and wine.
Barbara, Nee, and Philip, you've been along for this journey, so it was a two-parter. Do you remember the judgment of BC? That was yesterday.
Yeah, that was a long time ago, but yes, we do remember it, but we are really reveling in the Pinot Noir right now.
Okay, let's talk Pinot Noir. It's a great exercise. I don't know how they came to choose these 34, but these are good choices. I'm trying to figure out, have we discovered the Pinot consumer here? What do you think?
A Pinot consumer? Well, do you mean me?
Well, no, but I'm thinking of this crowd here that we're surrounded by.
I think so. I think people are really enjoying. I think that there is a very high minimum standard here. And you go to each table, and I can see the smiles on people's faces. I can see that they taste the first Pinot Noir at a table, and then they want to taste an older vintage, or they want to taste from a different vineyard. People are curious about terroir, they're curious about clones, they're curious about vintage, and Pinot Noir is allowing all of that to shine through.
Plus, I like the commitment from the table, from the pourers, from the wineries. They've sent their top people, and they're here pouring. If you like that, try this.
Agreed. If you have a question about winemaking, the winemaker is right there. If you have a question about the vineyards, you know, he or she is able to speak about the soil types, what goes on in that specific terroir. Very interesting.
Barbara, Nee, and Philip. And now, how about the choices? How about the Pinot? Any surprises out there?
What surprised me was that the range of good wines coming from different places and different vintages. And there's been a real dichotomy between recent vintages, 2010, 2011 being challenging on the cool side, and then we get in try 15 vintage, quite a warm vintage, and yet we're getting good wines in both vintages. So it's showing the maturing of the thoughtfulness in winemaking to be able to deal with those extremes and still make great wines. And this is something I don't think was happening with Pinot Noir maybe 10 or 15 years ago. And the maturity of the thoughtfulness in Pinot winemaking has really impressed me.
What have been some of the comments that you've heard today that stood out for you, especially from our friends that we were traveling with?
Absolutely. I hear the word pretty a lot. I hear the people talking about intensity without talking about power. So they're talking about flavor, but not heaviness. They're talking about drinkability, and they're also talking about temperature. So it's not a terribly warm day here, but still, I think most people are really appreciating the Pinot Noir that's chilled a little bit.
And that's what I see a lot of them doing. They just they're rolling their bottles on a yes. bed of ice, right?
Yeah.
A little chill, just a little chill. Same thing with a Gamay, if you can get away with it. Well, this is fantastic, and I would like to see this. Actually, frankly, I wouldn't like to see them leave here, but I'd love to see it in Vancouver. I'd love to see it on the island, this sort of traveling show.
I think it would be a great idea because the Pinot is coming from all over the province. We've got a wine from Creston. We've got a wine from Vancouver Island. So it doesn't have to be in the Okanagan Valley. So Vancouver, Kamloops, Kelowna, wherever we want to do it.
Duncan. People,
yes.
Don't miss the bus. I'll see you in the morning.
See you then.
Thanks.
Barbara, Dean, and Philip, BC Pinot Noir Celebration, Tasting Room Radio, Terry David Mulligan, Christine Coletta, supporter of this show, good friend. I didn't even actually get to your table. I assume it's Haywire, because you have a number of wines to pour. What are you pouring? What did you decide to pour?
Well, actually, we have three Pinot Noirs, but we boldly brought a sparkling wine with us as well from our narrative lineup. And it is 100% Pinot Noir from our very brand new Garnet Valley vineyard.
The vineyard that you've been promising for a couple of years?
Yes, that's right. We didn't promise it would be quick.
No, but you promised that it was coming.
Yes.
You teased us.
Yes, we did. And now it's finally here. So the very first tiny little amount of grapes that came in from the 2015 vintage, we decided to make sparkling wine with that. And we've made it in the what we call ancient method, which is the pet net, which is the primary fermentation, is the only fermentation. So we start the fermentation off in concrete tank, and then we bottle it halfway through, put a cap on it, and let it be.
How much do they care about what we talk about, that sort of the making of the wine? How much do they care about the clones? How much do they care? Or is it all about price point or their favorite wine?
I think they're caring more and more. As people's education evolves, they sort of drill down from the most basic information into understanding vineyard designation and then understanding the role that clones and rootstock play in our world when we're making selections as to what to plant. And I think it's really getting to be something that's key to them. We brought two wines from our Haywire lineup. Both of them are from the 2014 vintage, and they're from two little vineyards that are about a half a mile apart from one another. They're on different soils, but they're the same clone. And
how different are they?
They are so different. You couldn't believe it. And so people are really amazed. We made the wines the same way. We didn't treat them differently, and they have two individual characters, which is what vineyard does. So I think people are now understanding that, and we as winemakers are more and more keeping those things separate, yeah, as separate lots, and learning to appreciate them and treat them as individual children, if you would.
Is it fair to say you are now officially, fully, completely in the Pinot business?
We are, and very, very much loving it. Garnet Valley is a site that will potentially have 60 or 70 acres planted. We right now have 28 acres. And it's in Summerland in a very cool high mountain setting. And we've determined that it's Pinot Noir country.
Remind us once again what you're pouring at the table.
I am pouring three different Pinot Noirs from the Haywire line and one Pinot Noir sparkling wine from our narrative line. And all of those wines can be found at our winery, Okanagan Crush Pad, which is in Summerland.
Christine Coletta, Haywire, pouring at BC Pinot Noir Celebration, Tasting Room Radio. It's Chris Turek, who, of course, is the next generation at Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley and one of the sponsors of this show. What kind of tent is this? This is a rocking little tent.
It's a great tent. Some of the best Pinot Noirs from N onwards in the valley and on from the island, of course. Got Tantalus, Stoneboat, Spearhead, Quail's Gate, Tightrope, Stag's Hollow, you name it.
Now, what do they want to know about you and the Cowichan? Go ahead and pour if you have to.
We are offering, obviously, regionally a different style. Very light, bright, fruit-forward, very pure, fresh style. That's even more accentuated than the fresh, lighter style of the Okanagan Valley.
Just between you and I, do you think they know about the Cowichan? How's the profile?
I think they're learning. I think,
if we keep talking about it?
Absolutely. And if we keep pouring our wines, I know Andy at Avro Creek is here as well. If we keep pouring our wines and keep showing them what we do year after year, we can only go in one direction, and that's a good one, I think.
So you brought your Pinot, but you poured it in the form of a rosé, which is one of the stars, if not the star of your portfolio.
It's been a real pleasant happening that we came across this rosé. We tinkered with it, and we found out what exactly it wants to do, and we have developed a pretty good rosé program.
All right, so what's in the big bottle?
The big bottle is our 2014 Vintners Reserve Pinot Noir, which we bottled exclusively in the Magnum, or as I like to call it, the industry bottle. The 750s are half mags, if you're in the industry. I'm sure, I don't have to tell you that, so you know that. But it's basically a barrel selection of our better plots, our better vineyards, and the best performing fruit. For sake of discussion, this year it was mostly clones 828 and 667, with a splash of 115 and 777 as well. I mentioned it because, of course, we had the breakout sessions here at the event, which were focused on clonal specifications of Pinot Noir.
Are you just a tad pumped to be here?
It's a really exciting crowd. I had an early morning. I've had lots of coffee, and it's going to be a late night too because I'm driving back.
No. Yeah. You going back to the coast?
I have spent 4 hours in a ferry lineup last night, and I might be on the first one tomorrow morning.
You crazy? Okay, so what's special about the Pinot from Vancouver Island, and specifically yours at Unsworth?
I would say specifically with ours, and you could extend that to the rest of the island, is a purity of fruit, an elegance, a finesse, and a charm. It's you take the highest fruit that you usually expect in Pinot and dial it up 5 more degrees.
Have you figured out who the Pinot Noir fan is?
I think they come in a lot of different forms. There's the connoisseur who will, you know, approaches the table very professionally and, you know, sometimes with a bit of a standoff edge to them. But there's also the younger generations and you know, more entry level, maybe, shall we say, or more and people who enjoy the wine just for the sake of being wine and not for being a professional. And
okay.
I think they're enjoying the freshness and the ability to serve chilled, just the vibrancy.
And find him if you can, Chris Turk, who is the estate ambassador for the one and only Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. I'm Terry David Mulligan, Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. Unsworth Vineyards is pleased to be part of this year's Cowichan Wine Festival passport-style tasting event held this year in the month of June. In addition, they will be part of an evening tasting party at Brentwood School August 4th, where you can taste all of the participating wineries in one go under a summer starlit night by the ocean. Details at unsworthvineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery and Bistro on the Naramata Bench. They have opened and they're ready for 2022. The Bistro is opened for lunch after a 2-year hiatus with a set price 2-course lunch, dinner 5 to 9, and most importantly, they also have takeout options. Both the Wine Shop Tasting Room and Bistro are open Wednesday to Sunday and reservations only. They do offer wine sales Monday and Tuesday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Two new releases to tell you about, the 2021 Rosé and the 2019 Pinot Noir. All the details at hillsidewinery.ca. And welcome back to Tasting Room Radio. We come to the fourth and final segment of our Pinot special, The Geek Out. A couple of weeks ago, I got an invite from John Glavina, who is the owner and the mind behind Giant Head Estate Winery in Summerland. And he's always thinking, he always wants to expand what he's doing. He always wants to challenge himself. And so the invitation made sense. He said, I'd like you to get into Vancouver. Join me at John Schreiner's house. There'll be a third person in the room, one of the wine world's great Pinot specialists, Brent Gushawati. Brent is the guy who started bcpinotnoir.com. He understands Pinot, and specifically BC Pinot, better than almost anyone. He thinks we should be in the first circle of Pinot Noir makers. Yeah, Oregon, Burgundy, New Zealand, California. We should be considered to be in that circle. I think we just have to earn it. He got many of his wine chops working in the wine department at Christie's in London. And he toured deeply in Germany and California and Oregon. John Schreiner, of course, you well know, the author of 15 books now. He's First Call Wine Judge, Wine Mind, Writer, Authority. And John's blog is called John Schreiner on Wine. It's a great destination. So here we are, the three of us, blind tasting. John Glavina has wrapped these wine bottles in bags, and we tasted our way through these wines and then decided which ones we liked the best in an order. And then John revealed all. I've had to cut this down because we did a lot of geeking out, but I hope you enjoy this. You get a sense of it, featuring Brent Gushawati from bcpinotnoir.com, John Glavina from Giant's Head, and John Schreiner, the Dean of Wine Writers in Canada. Here's our blind tasting.
So, speaking of complexity, how's the judging system going?
The judging system's excellent.
Excellent. Okay.
So you wanted to read the real. You're so interested
in
Academy.
Get to the punchline.
You want
results oriented.
I want to see some bags being removed.
We can do that. So which was our top one? Let's look for number one. We have Brent picking number one for number one, and Brent also picked number one the first go around for number four, and John picked number four as his top both times. So let's reveal number four, shall we?
Okay.
One, two, three, four. Okay, so this might be...
Let's see.
Spearhead.
So this one...
Saddleblock. Oh, that's the best of the bunch for those guys.
Good or bad?
Here we go.
Fabulous.
Fabulous.
Absolutely.
So this is the...
They're making five or six now, and that is...
Obviously, extremely popular Spearhead Saddleblock Pinot Noir 2018.
So that's number four out of the way. And we're looking for what came in number twos. We got Brent picking number one. Terry picked it three and four, and John picked it number four. So two's in the running, and we also have number four. We've got number six, which is a number two for Mr. Schreiner, and a number two and a one for Terry David Mulligan, and a number three for Brent. So basically number six has been pretty popular.
Okay.
She wanted to reveal number six.
Sure.
What will it be?
All righty.
Get out of here.
Get out of town.
Giant Head Estate right Winery, here, 2018 Pinot Noir Reserve, VQA.
This one was made with complete estate fruit. It's 38% New French Oak. It says best after 2022 on it, which is true, because although it was pretty good.
Alcohol in it?
The alcohol. Guess the alcohol, bud.
Okay, I love guessing alcohol. 13.8.
Mr. Schreiner.
Well, about 14, I guess.
Any guesses?
What's that?
14.7% alcohol.
Really? Well hidden.
Yeah. And
it was there. I knew it was there.
What's the price point?
Right now, 55.
Congratulations.
Let's just reveal in order. Which one do you guys want to see next?
Just go one. Go start at the beginning. Start at one and go through whatever's left.
Okay. So number one, which was rated in the ones and twos and threes and fours. Brent, you liked this a lot. You rated number one and two. Terry David Mulligan rated at 3 and 4, and John rated at number 4. So this is number 1. Is this number 1? Oh, what is it? Oh, it's another Giant Head Pinot Noir.
Wow.
2018 Giant Head Pinot Noir, not reserved.
And it is 14.1% alcohol, and you know I like high alcohol Pinot, which is my deal. So there you go. Just so that you know.
It's well hidden. Like, it's great, because it's hard to hide alcohol.
I started making...
It's not there on the body. Like, usually you get body and you get silkiness, and, you know, that's a tip-off that you got a high alcohol. Mm. Honestly, that felt on the lighter side to me, so...
The next one, number two.
Double bag.
Double bag.
This is double bag. Oh, what is this? This is the...
That's one I brought.
Fox and Archer, 3 blocks, 2018... Fox and
I think
Archer.
That's their inaugural vintage.
This is the unfiltered. The alcohol content is 12.9. So those green flavors, the dirty earth, medium intensity. I love the nose on it, though, I have to say. I did like the nose on it a lot.
Little clammy little bottle here. Fox and Archer, 3 blocks, Pinot Noir, 2018. Fox and Archer, well done.
Okay, so here is number three.
What is it, sir?
It's Canyon View Wine. So basically, I make a Pinot Noir for export. So it's not from our estate fruit, but I'm very bullish on the area between Trout Creek Canyon and Zimmerman's Gulch, which is the next one over. It's all to the west of Okanagan Lake. and it's on the east-facing slope below Giant's Head Mountain.
So what we've done is we have, after going through the six bottles, so John, a couple of things. You left the room for a second and came back with a bottle with a cork in it. Tell me about what you brought in.
It's a wine from, it's called One Mill Road, which is a winery on... that's the name of the vineyard, too, on just north of Naramata. It's owned by David and Cynthia Enns, who were the founders of Laughing Stock, which they sold 5 or 6 years ago. And they have this small Pinot Noir vineyard. And this is Block 2. They also have a Block 1, which I've already opened and tasted. And it was not too different from this. It was pretty good. I don't know how much... time this spends, it's a 2020. I don't know how much time it spends in oak. I would think about a year and a bit. Yeah, that's what can I say? It's they're tending. In fact, Cynthia does the viticulture. She spends a ton of time on those grapes.
Okay, so this is a project obviously that they could see down the road.
Yeah, they it's their quote semi-retirement project. they did very well with selling Laughing Stock to Artera.
I love that pour, John. Any revelations here?
Well, it was great fun. I came across a Pinot Noir that I'd never run into before, Fox and Archer. So I'm going to have to look them up next time I'm in the Okanagan. Thanks to COVID, I haven't been in the Okanagan since 2019, so I'm glad to have tasted what John is doing at Giant's Head. And I can see you really paying attention to Cremo. And then, of course, my consistent number one was the Spearhead, the Saddle Block.
Yeah.
That is such a great Pinot, and Grant Stanley is such a fantastic Pinot Noir winemaker. Grant once told me when he was working at Quail's Gate, we were talking about their wines, and I was tasting with him. And he said, John, Pinot Noir is what I think about 80% of the time. And I said, Grant, your wines don't taste, the other wines don't taste like it. But he is just absolutely dedicated to Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
And he learned his Pinot Noir making in New Zealand before he was, that's where he started in the wine business. And now he's made great Pinots at Quail's Gate, great Pinots at 50th Parallel, and now he's making great Pinots at Spearhead.
All right, John, just one thought. I was in the Winemakers Weekend in Yosemite when we were living in San Francisco, and Evan Goldstein, I think it was his name, master wine or master sommelier, and it was a Pinot tasting at 9 o'clock on a Monday morning, a Saturday morning, and these were big wine fans from San Francisco that were there in the room, assembled in Yosemite National Park, this gorgeous hotel, and he started by saying, he's talking about Pinot, if I were buying land today or a vineyard today. This is maybe 12 years ago, 15 years ago. He said, I wouldn't buy in Northern California. I would not buy in Oregon. I would not buy in Washington State. I would buy in British Columbia, ladies and gentlemen, because it's all coming their way for Pinot, especially British Columbia. And I'm the only Canadian in the room, and I gave him a standing ovation. What's the future for Pinot in BC?
You know, there's this discussion every once in a while that the British Columbia should have a signature grape. Now, I've never agreed with that concept because the Okanagan, and we'll leave the Similkameen out for them, but the Okanagan is 100 miles long,
yeah.
And it's got the terroirs that go all the way from the Rhone to the Rhine. So you can't have one, it's not like New Zealand, not like the South Island, you can't have one grape that covers the whole thing. However, the one variety that performs better in more terroirs than any other in the Okanagan, the red, is Pinot Noir. Yeah. From Okanagan Falls north to, you can go as far as Vernon, a project that failed. And there was a golf course and so on.
Drink from that was the Pinot Noirs of so many wineries that won medals, and I started tripping over it. I'm going, where did that fruit come? It was all that, so much of it was coming back to that. It was a real estate development.
Yes.
That was going to be built around the concept of, you know, living in the vineyard, yada, yada.
Yeah.
The fruit from that is phenomenal. I hope they have not turned that into housing, because it was really
amazing. I don't know if they have. Again, I have haven't stayed up. It's 2 years ago they were talking about pulling out the vines and putting in housing, and I thought what a crime that would be. I mean, you name it, Privato in Kamloops.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Buying their fruit, right. Among others.
Well done. Brent, thoughts just in wrapping up?
Pretty much echoing John. You know, the three standouts, the Spearhead, Saddle Block. I really use the T word very sparingly, terroir, okay? But there are a few Pinot Noir vineyards, you know, that's a grape that I focus on, in BC that I would say you might want to start thinking that it really is expressing terroir. The Saddle Block Vineyard would be one of them. The Meyer Old Block would be another.
Yeah.
And I say that because I recently tasted some older vintages of the Saddle Block going back to 12 and 14. And they're just such complete Pinots. Like, they really are the crossroads of, you know, they kind of touch every spoke on the Pinot Noir flavor wheel, you know, like it's really all there. And this is just what I associate with Saddle Block out of Spearhead. Really, the story of the tasting here is the progress from Giant Head, honestly. And I've been tasting Giant Head Pinots going back to, I think, 11s and 12s before they were even commercially available. You know, they were nice enough to share some of the wines that they had made when they were working through it. The progress here on both the regular and the reserve, which are quite distinct, as they should be, given what I tasted even a couple of years ago, there's tremendous progress here. Like, they're really in the game now in terms of Pinot Noir, you know. There's really only a handful at the top, and they are approaching that top echelon. Like, they're really on track here. This is very interesting stuff. It's got complexity, it's got nuance, accessible. Yeah, that to me is really the story of the day. I was a little surprised. I didn't think it would move that fast. Let's put it that way. So.
And final comments on One Mill Road.
It's nice to know the story, but when you do know the story and you make the comparison, you know, it's very much in the style of their Pinot from Yeah, which is full, narrow-matic kind of flavor, which is sort of quite savory. Full in the sense that it's full right from the beginning right to the end. Not overpowering, nicely balanced. It's very young. There's no nuance yet, but there's lots of good stuff in there. I would love to see what this is going to be like in 3 to 5 years. Very impressive. It has an intensity that you can see in Naramata. It's got intensity without it being too heavy or, you know, because it's still north enough that you're going to get the acidity and the balance. A little bigger, but reminds me in a way of some of the Howling Bluff, like the Howling Bluff, their main vineyard. Great promise, amazing out of the gate, which shows their experienced winemakers. So. Yeah.
Okay, just so people understand the parameters, John, your favorite Pinot Noir from the Okanagan or from BC?
You know, I get so many of them. I tend to say the one that's in the glass before in front of me. I do like what Quail's Gate consistently has been making over the years. I like what Meyer has been making over the years, and I'm beginning to like what's coming from the north. I'm looking forward to what Nicky Calloway is going to produce from O'Rourke. I've tasted maybe a Pinot from up there, but from young vines.
Brent, your thoughts?
I divide it into mature BC Pinot that I've tasted and less than mature.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, the best fully mature Pinot Noir I've tasted at BC is Arrow Creek. 2006. I have one treasured bottle left. other than that, in terms of what's going on, Meyer Old Block, absolutely. Spearhead Saddle Block, absolutely. I haven't tasted lately, but underappreciated is Synchromash. He's so well known for his Rieslings, but he makes gorgeous Pinot. And that Pinot was, I think, from the same property that you're talking about, north of Vernon. Oh boy, well, Blue Mountains, oh my God. Particularly the new single vineyard Blue Mountains are unbelievable. I people talk about Burgundian, like it's more like Burgundian-esque is really what they mean. But particularly one, if I'm, you know, going to mention it, there are three single blocks. One is called Gravel Force. That to me is pure. It's just, it's not like Côte de Nuit Burgundy. It like is Côte de Nuit Burgundy. It's so simple, so straightforward. There is nothing extraneous in it. It's absolutely lovely. Yeah, Blue Mountain, you can't touch them. Again, apologies to the people that I may be. There's so many little producers producing wonderful stuff that nobody knows about.
I won't talk about the big guys because you took care of all of the top rank, but I like to look at the and try to follow the story of the young Pinot makers just getting into it, who can learn from the experience of those around them and go, I want to go where they are. That's what I want to do. Roche, because of their history. I think they arrived fully formed. I love Howling Bluff, of course. And I'm more drawn to the growers and the winemakers than I am to the actual location. I'm willing to bet on people and what they bring.
What you can taste is people who care about Pinot,
yeah,
who really care about it.
Yeah.
Because they go after the things that Pinot Noir can, what makes it magical, you know. And if we're talking about up-and-comers, Alderley, Wolf Estates,
yeah,
both on Vancouver Island.
Yeah. Rathgen Cellars.
Oh, Rathgen, absolutely. Kudatash, now on Salt Spring. He was the winemaker at Avril Creek, yeah, for a while. There's more if you want.
Okay, thank you, John.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for your time. This has been a fabulous learning experience for me.
Let's go catch a plane. My thanks to all concerned for joining me on this Pinot special on Tasting Room Radio. Next week, as promised, it's In the Neighborhood, the four sponsors who have supported us for the last couple of years. Jason Parks Customs, that's The Hatch and Screaming Frenzy and Crown and Thieves, etc. Hillside, Unsworth, and Moon Cursor will be our guests next week for the long weekend, actually. And my thanks, to the good people of Harbor Air for supporting Tasting Room Radio and for coming on board as a title sponsor. Cheers. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery and Bistro on the Naramata Bench. They have opened and they're ready for 2022. The Bistro is opened for lunch after a two-year hiatus with a set price two-course lunch, dinner 5 to 9, and most importantly, they also have takeout options. Both the Wine Shop Tasting Room and Bistro are open Wednesday to Sunday and reservations only. They do offer wine sales Monday and Tuesday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Two new releases to tell you about, the 2021 Rosé and the 2019 Pinot Noir. All the details at hillsidewinery.ca. This edition of Tasting Room Radio is presented by Harbor Air, a quintessential West Coast experience, safe, fast and fun connections throughout coastal BC. You can find them at harborair.com.